Please welcome Nancy and John, who will light the chalice. And this gives John a chance to light the skies with actual light and not just his great talks.
In this solemn moment, when voices subside, when silence can be heard, we light this chalice for all those who preceded us and also for those who will follow us. We light this chalice for those who made possible that we are here today, because in spite of their failings and limitations, a dream moved them to light a chalice just as we are doing. And for those who will burn a flame when we are no longer, when they will renew this light full of hope and enthusiasm, this light shines for all of them, for those who came before and for those who will come later, and for us who are living in between, linking past and future together. The words of Jaume de Marcos, leader of the Unitarian Church of Barcelona, Spain.
Thank you, John. Thanks, Nancy. Well, I wake up with a special treat every morning because a morning does not go by that Molly does not have a new vision that she wants to conquer. And today she's going to share that with you. Patty, you're going to have to stop eyeing these t-shirts for your next fundraiser. We don't have anything else under them. So one morning, Molly said to me she wanted to walk the Camino because she'd always read and seen movies about it, and it always seemed so inspiring. And I said to Molly, you know, Molly, we don't have to spend thousands of dollars to walk. We can walk right here in Madison. Well, that had no currency with Molly. So we tried walking in the Appalachian Trail and doing day hikes, and that still wasn't suffice. So she went and marched on. And I think you want to give a special hand for Molly, because never in Prairie's history she's been here for years. She's ran the watchtowers of the Social Action Committee, but never we had a presenter who's brought more, as I can see, more audiovisual aids with her to enliven her talk. So Molly, please come and share your experiences with the Camino.
It's hard not to be a member of this congregation and learn the value of costume from people like Robin Proud and Gary Gates. So this is pretty much what I wore on the hotter days. So thanks everybody for coming today. As Pete said, I walked the last or the final segment of what's called the Camino de Santiago in this past May. It is also known as St. James Way, and it is a route that can be any distance you choose to walk, but the full extent of it across Spain is about 500 miles. I walked to the final 100 miles from a little town called Ocebrero to the final destination, which is the cathedral in Santiago de Compostela, which houses the relics of St. James the Apostle. The Camino is actually a network of paths that feed into the final segment coming into Santiago that start in northern Spain, further north in Spain and in Portugal. And the Camino, the tradition of the Camino began as long ago as 1812, when the remains of St. James were discovered in a field near what became Santiago. And before I forget, again, being a prairie where we are fun and informal, this is also show and tell, so I'm going to start passing around some of my memorabilia for the trip for people to see. The Camino de Santiago was one of the most important Christian pilgrimages during the Middle Ages, and it remains very popular for both pilgrims who are on religious missions and non-religious travelers. It follows early Roman trade routes and traverses mountains, fields, and ancient villages, starting in the French Pyrenees and crossing Spain to the northwestern coast. The path that I followed is considered the most popular route. It's called the Route Française. And as I said, it's in total is about 500 miles. More than 300,000 pilgrims hiked at least 100 kilometers, which I think is what, about 70 miles? 62 and a half. Which is the minimal amount that you can hike and get a certificate. That many people hiked it in 2017. The pilgrims come from all over the world. It's just luck who you end up walking with and talking with. But I was amazed at the number of South Koreans were traveling the Camino. It was like, really? You know, I meant to look whether there was a large Catholic population in South Korea, or I what someone told me is that a South Korean had made the pilgrimage, had written a book about it, and it had inspired hundreds of thousands of Koreans to go on tours. But I also met people from all over Europe, from Scandinavia, Australia, and New Zealand. The Australians and the New Zealanders really amazed me because they traveled more than 40 hours just to get to their departure point before they walked 500 miles. So the dedication's just amazing. The statistics I've read are that about 52% of the pilgrims are men and 48% are women. The most common group statistically that they've recorded of travelers on the Camino are Italians, followed secondly by Germans. And I did see a lot of Germans. They were often biking, and they were often at the cafes along the route. And I was like, I do not know how people could drink so much beer and continue to walk or ride their bikes. But they did. People are all ages, shapes, and sizes. The oldest person I heard of traveling the Camino was 94. So Gary, you got plenty to look forward to. I was most personally impressed with a young couple from Ottawa who were hiking with a 6-month baby and a 4-year-old child in a steady cold rain. This impressed me mightily because when my children were young, my idea of an expedition was a trip to McDonald's that had a attached playground. I have read that there have people who have traversed at least parts of the Camino in wheelchairs, but I did not see anyone, and the Camino is by no means handicap accessible. My joke was that if the U.S. operated it, the Camino, there would be a perfectly smooth asphalt handicap route through the mountain valleys with the Trump Hotel every 50 miles. Some pilgrims carry large backpacks, and they might be considered the true pilgrims. They are carrying everything with them, which would include clothes, their medical supplies, extra shoes, a bedroll, and they stay at the communal hostels or albergues along the way, which also will have kitchens and they can cook there. Others, like me, are called the luxury pilgrims, who have only a small backpack in which I carried all my medical supplies, which was lots of Band-Aids, tape, water bottle, bug spray, sunscreen, and we had we had traveled with suitcases which were transported by commercial operations from one village to the next where we were staying. And we dined at restaurants. There were also many fat tire bikers along the route, which has only recently allowed them to receive accreditation for making a bike trip for the 100 miles. Pilgrimages have been and remain a feature of many world religions, which when I was researching this, I thought, of course, like the Hajj to Mecca, and Hindus who travel to various shrines around the Darshan area. Travel has long been regarded a physical means to a spirit of having a spiritual journey, a way to fulfill a promise, to do penance for a wrong, to seek a cure, or healing of an illness or injury. And finally, for many people, their goal is to deepen their faith. When you apply for your certificate, which is making its way around there in the picture frame of completion, that's the passport. That's my passport. But the picture frame has the certificate of completion that you get. And the last thing they have you do at the Office of Pilgrims at the end is sign a sheet saying, you know, where, what country you're from. And then there are three little check boxes, what your reasons were for the travel. One is religious, one is spiritual, one is other. And other, for a lot of people, some, if you saw the movie The Camino, is like weight loss. You know, if you're walking 15 to 20 miles a day, you should be able to lose weight unless you are eating all the bread that is served to you during the day. I, for one, thought I should have been losing about 10 pounds a day with the amount of I was walking and the lack of snacking in between, but it did not happen. But anyway, on the sheet that I signed at the Pilgrim's office, most of the people that I could see who had signed it ahead of me had indicated that their purpose was religious. That was interesting. Historically, pilgrimages had become recognized expression of Christian faith and a retreat from worldly concerns by the 4th century. The earliest pilgrimages were to the Holy Land and then to Rome, where many early Christian saints had been martyred. Obtaining, touching, or viewing relics of saints was desirable because it made the viewer more saintly. These pilgrimages to the Holy Land and to Rome were fairly safe for as long as the Roman Empire still functioned. And then, beginning with the first Christian Empire, Emperor Constantine, churches were built along at the religious sites and along the routes so that the pilgrims could hear Mass and get spiritual sustenance while they traveled. Hospitals were also built along the pilgrimage routes to treat those who became sick or were injured. Monasteries were built to provide food and shelter. Many of these old structures still remain along the Camino that I traveled, but they have been repurposed. For example, the famous old Knights Templar hospitals have become fancy hotels. The Knights Templar, who you probably all heard of at some point, were an, I didn't realize this, they were actually, I knew there were warriors, they were knights, but they were actually clerics as well, that grew up to protect the pilgrims along these ancient routes. Because it was customary for pilgrims to bring offerings to the shrine they were visiting, the churches at the sites often became very rich. And in time, the Knights Templar became so rich and powerful that, I don't know, maybe 14th century, whoever was the current pope and the king of France decided to eradicate them, and they declared them to be heretics, burned the leaders at the stake, and liquidated their assets, at least in France and in Italy. In later Middle Ages, pilgrimages were made to earn indulgences, which, for those of you who are not lapsed Catholics, like many of us here, were guarantees by the Catholic Church that it would intercede with God for remission from sins that had been confessed and had been forgiven by a priest. An indulgence reduced the time for your stay in purgatory, which is where you landed if you had not led a perfect life, and a status in between heaven and hell, and your sins were expiated. The worse your sins, the longer your purgatory stay. By the 14th century, criminals could actually be sentenced to walk a pilgrimage rather than be put into a jail. Convicted felons had to carry a weapon, the weapon that they used in their crime, around their neck. And heretics, for example, had to wear a yellow cross on the front and back of their pilgrim's tunic. To prove that they had completed the journey, the felon had to collect signatures at all the shrines that they visited along the way and receive a certificate at the destination city of Santiago. Hence the passport that's out there somewhere where you have to get, it's coming, get stamps. Originally, only the churches could give you a stamp to, that would show you'd also been to Mass. Now they're big business, and every restaurant, hotel, bar has a stamp that's usually do-it-yourself. And there is, as everywhere, entrepreneurs who will kind of jump out of the woods at you and offer you a stamp for a small fee. It's occurred to me that we might be get volunteers more easily to serve breakfast at the homeless shelter, Gary, if only we could offer indulgences. The Camino de Santiago came into being during a time that the Muslims were conquering southern Spain. Muslim soldiers were reported to be fired up and rallied behind what was claimed to be an arm of Muhammad. And some scholars of pilgrimages believe that the Christians needed their own warrior saint to motivate them in the fight against the Moors. Saint James, who had supposedly preached in Spain, and whose body, after death, was returned there in a stone boat from Jerusalem, may have been created by the ecclesiastic hierarchy for that purpose. Many pictures of him show him riding in armor and a white horse and leading troops into battle. And it was said that he appeared to soldiers in two critical battles against the Moors. Later, St. James became the patron saint of pilgrims and is depicted in pilgrim garb with the signature conch shell. This is something you see everywhere, and this is the color scheme that you will typically see too. All along the route, the government has created like concrete pillars that have this symbol embedded into them with an arrow pointing you in the direction you want to keep going. It will the monument or the marker may also show your altitude and far, how far you have come or how far you're going. It was always in kilometers, which I have yet to master, so I never paid any attention. My personal pilgrimage started at the highest point of the Camino Frances, and it was about 100 miles from the final destination of Santiago de Compostela. You can, in fact, and if I'd known this, I might have pushed harder, you can, in fact, get a certificate if you do 100 kilometers, which is what a lot of people do. My sister and I reached the ancient village of Osebrero late in the day of May 12th, after two flights, a bus trip, and finally a taxi. We arrived in a hail and snowstorm. This tiny village is a mile high in elevation, and we were lucky to have skipped the 2,000 foot ascent to this point. The buildings were huddled stone, and the wall enclosures and the pavers in the road were all granite and slate. There is an abundance of stone in this part of the world. There were also several round, thatched mountain dwellings that dated from pre-Roman Celtic times that have been reconstructed, and I read that people actually lived in them until this century. The rustic hotel where we stayed felt like a cave with its thick stone walls and small windows, but it was cozy with the rain and cold outside. This village has preserved the oldest existing church along the Camino, and a mass is said there every day, and the pilgrims receive a blessing. Every church along the route always has a blessing for pilgrims at the end, and they can also, of course, get their passport stamped. As I said, passports are stamped many places now. It's big business. Osebrero is, this tiny village, is also the entry point to the autonomous northern region of Galicia, Spain, which still has very strong Celtic influence, which is demonstrated in its native language, which is Galician, the place names like Osebrero, O Coruña, and its own variety of bagpipe, which are called the gaitas. Like Ireland, there has been much immigration by young men who could not inherit any of the family land because it would go to an oldest son. so that many young men have moved to the United Kingdom and the U.S. to work. Therefore, many people in that region, because they have family members who live in English-speaking parts of the world, can't speak English. The region is very hilly. Hopefully, I'll be able to show some slides later that will give you a feeling for that. And the first 2 days that we hiked, we were slogging through rain and wearing every item of clothing that we had packed. My Helly Hansen waterproof jacket proved not to be really waterproof. So I ended up using one of those plastic ponchos over my Helly Hansen. And my waterproof pants were so long, fortunately, because they were Peters, they actually bagged over my shoes, so my shoes stayed fairly dry. Cafes along the route would have fires burning, which were very cozy and warm, except they were usually completely enclosed by people's clothes and boots that they were drying, and you couldn't get anywhere near them. I felt that I had been mentally prepared for the distances we would be walking, though not physically. I mean, I was totally exhausted. One of my good walking buddies is here today, and I thought making it to the Union and back was good training. I was like, it's about 8 miles. But I was not prepared for the hills, which are steep and endless. Downhills were the hardest on my knees, and I was glad that I bought walking sticks. The first day alone, we descended from Osei Brero 1,600 feet in rain and mud. Hence, the development of my handicapped accessible theory. The ancient road is bracketed with stone walls that are so thick and overgrown that you have to poke with a strong stick through the soil and vegetation to find the underlying rock. The path often follows the ridge line of the hill, and on either side there are pastures that slope down steeply. The route winds through farmsteads, which are of course all made out of stone and granite, and at times we'd have to plaster ourselves against the side walls as somebody would come through with their John Deere tractor. I could often hear cattle in the fields on either side of me, but you couldn't see them because the trees growing out of the walls were so thick. But for the first time in my life, I heard cuckoo bird calls. We walked between 15 and 20 miles a day. A big part of my learning curve was figuring out my daily foot gear and foot treatments, which toes to tape, which toes to pad, which combination of the $100 worth of socks I had bought at REI would I wear that day? Would I grease the bottom of my feet, the soles of my feet, with Vaseline? There are a million theories online about what shoes to wear, what socks to wear, what to grease. And you basically, everyone I traveled with was doing something different. I had brought with me every product that is manufactured in the U.S. for blisters and hot spots. I was our resident at our group of five, the personal foot farmacia. Any town, though, of any size would also have vending machines along the main road where you could purchase your own foot care products if you had run out or not brought along some necessary item. You are only as good as your feet or your legs. A slim woman I met from Australia who was celebrating her 50th birthday by walking the Camino spent much of her time sidelined and taking buses due to shin splints. A tiny, feisty woman from South Korea who had fallen early in her Camino and was clearly still in pain from her injury had refused to stop despite the pleas of her family. At the point I met her and we shared trail mix over Coca-Colas, she had only one day left to go. I had been very anxious going into the Camino in the first several days about whether I could make the distances or what I would get terminal blisters that would leave me going with my luggage from one town to the next. I was also worried about having to make highly inconvenient bathroom stops in between cafes. I would like to say that I was meditating deeply along the route, but in fact, a great deal of the time, I just had to watch my feet, because as soon as I would look away to try to see something in a pasture, I would stumble over some of the rocky path. There were points where it was gravel, there were points where it was asphalt. A lot of the time it was very ancient roadbeds that were rocky and covered with debris. I was also, as you might guess, the slowest member of our group of five, often walked alone and arrived last at the pension where we would be staying. I was moving too slowly to stop for any of the sites listed in my guidebook, so if any of you want to look at those, I didn't see them in the guidebook. But as the man from Louisiana that I met at a busy intersection in one actual city that we passed through, we were both stopped at a major intersection trying to find the concrete markers, trying to decide where to go. This man said to me, what he had learned is that the Camino was not a race or a competition. And he had, I think, done at that point, you know, nearly the 500 mile distance himself. He said he'd gotten lost once while praying the rosary on some mountaintop. I only got lost once when traversing a very steep road and failed to see that the pedestrian path actually cut off from the road across a pasture, because I was busy going back and forth like this to reduce the torque on my knees. When I got to the bottom of the hill, I didn't see any other pilgrims, which is always a bad sign. I followed, but there were yellow arrows on the roadbed, so I followed those for a while and doubled back, and I looked at my guidebook, and still, this after half an hour, was not seeing anyone coming behind me or catching up with anyone. So I finally started to head back to the cafe where I had last sat. And a tour guide came by in a van who I hailed thinking it was a taxi. And this guy gave me a ride to the next town and explained that I was actually following the route for the bikers. So, why do people do these things? For some, it's the physical challenge because it's there, because they want to see if they can live a simple lifestyle, if they can adapt to the rigors of carrying backpacks and going to staying in youth hostels. For many people I met, it seemed that they were at some sort of a personal decision point in their lives or coming out of difficult periods and needed time to recover emotionally and mentally. As I marched down from the hills outside of Santiago, the final destination, on my last day, I had some sense of the joy that the ancient pilgrims must have felt when arriving at the sacred destination. By now it was hot, and I was wearing my On Wisconsin t-shirt. Think Bucky does the Camino. I'm thinking of submitting the picture to University magazine. The old part of the city, the cathedral is actually visible from these hills just outside the city, and hence the hills are called Mount Gozo, which because people would exclaim, oh joy, when they could see the spires of the cathedral finally from the hills outside it. But when you get to the outskirts of the city, you actually still have 2 more miles before you get to the cathedral, which is typical, that wherever you were staying on the Camino was always further than you thought you had to walk. The number of pilgrims by this time had greatly increased because they were the paths from different networks had converged. There were hundreds of people. There was no way to get lost at that point. But the locals in the city seemed as uninterested and unimpressed by the steady flow of visitors as had the farm folk. I got to the cathedral, but the traditional entrance, main entrance where pilgrims have entered, as many cathedrals in Europe, is under repair. So I went in a side entrance and sat in a pew for 30 or 45 minutes because I was so hot and it was so cool and quiet and dark. The church was magnificent. The main altar dazzles with gold and silver, and I can imagine how the awe that pilgrims in the 1400s and 1500s must have felt when they finally arrived there exhausted, sick, or injured. Once I recovered some energy, I climbed down a flight of steps into the crypt that is carved underneath the main altar that supposedly houses the relics of St. James. There is a recess in the crypt, which has wrought iron bars in front of it, and at the back of the recessed area, there's a gleaming box on another small altar. There are kneelers in front of the wrought iron gate that I knelt at, and I took my picture as I shoved my little black velvet bag inside the recess. And the area was already strewn with mementos and tokens that other people had left. There were bouquets, there were photographs, there were notes. I carried with me a stone for a man I knew who is fighting cancer for the third time. I carried a token for a friend who has chronic back pain. And I had personal tokens for me and my family. I left this little bag inside this niche close to the relics of St. James. I'm sure they're cleared out and tossed every day. But who knows? My friend tells me that his back has not yet miraculously improved. Yeah. What both the Camino and the Cathedral and my visit to the Keith Cathedral left me struck by was the determination and persistence of people throughout the ages. I have always been astounded at the work and sweat of craftsmen of all kinds who built cathedrals over hundreds of years, and the altar that is just encrusted with gold and silver. The belief and dedication of travelers throughout the centuries who risked robbery and illness and injuries to honor their God or to fulfill a commitment or examine a life issue is what is astounding to me. I'm in awe of people, not God, though I do cling to some childhood ingrained belief. Am I transformed? Not yet, anyway, but I am walking more every day, and I'm glad I did it, and I'm glad it's done.
One story that Molly didn't get time to share with you, and that is in the great cathedral of Santiago de Compostela, there is a huge, the incense are in huge urns the size of a house. And the reason for that is that in ancient times, of course not currently, the pilgrims didn't smell too good when they came for benediction.
Said that he had, in a vision, because there was only one person who attended the Mass, actually saw the Eucharist being transformed into the body and blood of Christ. So that's the miracle that occurred at this church. Next, Beck. This is a monument that you see along the first day. It gives you, I don't know how well you can see it. It is some poor soul struggling against rain and wind. So now it gives you a feeling of what's coming next. This is just a shot. We were huddled out of the rain eating our trail mix, and it just gives, again, the a vision or a picture of how common the use of stone in all buildings there. Next one. This is a vision. This is a path in the rain, people crossing on a little bridge in their rain gear, a stone bridge over a riverbed. This to me is how I will remember the Camino, walking along a ridgeline in a totally, with the trees totally overgrown, and on either side is the ancient stone walls. This is one of my favorites. This is Guy Pilgrim and Pilgrim Dogs. Each of the dogs has their own little backpack. And they, like everyone else, made better time than I did. Next. This is the example of the markers that you see all along the route. Though you will also see this traditional shell maybe embedded in door frames of buildings. The shell is the symbol of St. James and appears everywhere. Next time.
This is one of the cafes along the way, and there's some kind of tour group in there, probably German. And you can't make it out, but that in the foreground, the wall is lined with beer bottles. Next one. This is an example of the conch shell as a manhole cover on the final approach to Santiago. Next one. This is Mount Gozo. So this is the highest point outside of Santiago, where this cathedral is, that where the pilgrims could finally see the spires of the cathedral and knew they were almost there. Next. This is a picture of the niche where the relics are, and way in the back is the box, which I'm sure has beautiful metalwork on it, but you can see all the things that people leave. Photos, I'm sure people were lost or sick. Next one. That's the altar. And in, I don't know if you see it, sort of high in the foreground is the incense burner that Pete was talking about. And I also attended a high mass there the second day we were there, which was quite impressive. There were con celebrants from several different countries. The bishop was saying the mass, but he was joined by priests from Ireland, the U.S., Canada. There were like 8 con celebrants. And then at the high point in the mass, 6 guys have a huge rope, and they get that incense burner swinging from one end, the full length, the longest arm of the cathedral, until it's almost hitting the roof line. And it's really impressive. This is a view of the cathedral from the exterior. Typically, pilgrims would enter those doors that are now blocked off. And inside, there's a famous pillar, a column that they would touch with their hands, but we could not access that. There's a huge plaza in front. I sat out there for another hour, just looking around. Next one. Feet. Feet. I would send pictures of my feet to my children, who would say, "Mom, do you have any pictures of anything else to send us?" Becky didn't, but her sister did. More feet. This was at the end, so.
But one of the towns we came into was having some sort of a festival, a celebration that was quite wonderful. They were in their native garb, so the women were in full black skirts and black bodices with these brilliant colored fringed shawls underneath the bodices. And they were had games. Children were playing games sort of in a town park that would have been traditional, you know, a couple hundred years ago. And there was a municipal band that was playing. So we caught that. I marked spiritual, and actually what happened to that? I did intend to say something about it. I think my oldest daughter, Becky's sister, had walked the Camino when she was an exchange student in Spain. And you know, she kept a blog that had us all just laughing and entranced. And I thought, I'd like to do that sometime. So that was part of it. Part of it, I think, was being part of something that was just such an ancient tradition and old. And that's about the best reasons I think I have.
Thanks, Molly. The closing words are, we don't think about pilgrimage in this country, except for a few of you guys. We don't think about meditation. The idea of taking a 6-week trek is totally foreign to most Americans, but it's probably exactly what we need. Emilio Estevez, who is quite a wonderful contrast to Charlie Sheen. Thank you for coming. Please extend your hand of friendship to those around you. Then join us for coffee and conversation.